Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MDC defends $45 million investment in Hotel Santa Rita, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Members of the Midland Development Corporation addressed questions from skeptical members of the public about the $45 million it plans to provide for the Hotel Santa Rita project. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris explained that revitalizing downtown will be a significant boost to tax rolls. For tax purposes, she said downtown is valued at $57.3 million per city block, approximately three times more than other areas of the city. That explains why downtown is such an important economic multiplier, she said. John Burkholder, who sits on the Planning and Zoning Committee, asked if the Hotel Santa Rita proposal put forth by Midland Downtown Renaissance LP was such a better proposal than the others that had been submitted. Past Board Chairman Chase Gardaff said a hotel property of the caliber of the Bush Convention Center was needed because a lack of accommodations means the Bush Convention Center is underutilized. He added that the Santa Rita would be iconic to downtown Midland and serve as a catalyst for attracting new restaurants and retail businesses downtown and spurring downtown property owners to redevelop their properties. The Vaughan Building has long been a thorn in our side, and we need to encourage redevelopment and not buildings with shopping carts and broken windows, he said. Burkholder and others asked if the other companies submitting proposals had been given the opportunity to go back and restructure their proposals to meet what the board was looking for. But board members said the other projects were not nearly as transformative. They also asked how the board could justify giving $45 million to one private company and not others. Each request will be considered on a case-by-case basis. This agreement does not preclude other projects from requesting funds or revisiting past requests, Harris told the Reporter Telegram by email after Monday's meeting. Board members also said that the $45 million would not deplete the MDC budget and hinder their ability to attract or assist other businesses. Board members acknowledged that $45 million was a large number that was initially hard to accept. What I'm concerned about is what other groups beyond the MDC or the city itself are committing funds to help other groups coming in to revitalize downtown, said board member Evie Brown. Board member Brad Bullock agreed the $45 million is a big number, but over time I believe the hotel will transform downtown and generate future cash flow. I got comfortable with that number. He noted that work has been done to improve downtown, Centennial Park and the Bush Convention Center, but he was concerned that the convention center is underutilized and losing events because of a lack of hotel accommodations. Bullock and board member Jill Pennington said they were won over by the return on investment, pegged at $67 million over the first 22 years of the project and $9 million after that over the life of the property. Board members stressed that they had taken serious, in-depth looks at all proposals and were making every effort to be good fiduciary stewards of the tax revenues entrusted to the MDC. Harris noted that Odessa Marriott was an $80 million project built with 41% public funding, while Dallas's Omni Hotel was a $500 million project, 100% publicly financed. After the board unanimously approved the agreement, Burkholder, who stressed he was supportive of downtown revitalization efforts, said there were still questions he would like answered. "It's such a rush deal. It's hard to make a decision," he said. "I understand where they're coming from, but I think we need more information in order to make an informed decision." The MDC owns the land where Western United Life and the J.L. Davis properties once stood, and where the hotel will be built. The agreement calls for $5 million to be disbursed within 5 business days of Project Phase 1, full-service, full-star hotel with 135 to 150 rooms, retail and restaurant, ballroom and meeting space, construction commencement. $10 million to be disbursed within 5 business days following MDC's receipt of architect's certification of 50% completion. $15 million to be disbursed within 5 business days following MDC's receipt of certification of completion for Project Phase 1. $7.5 million to be disbursed within 5 business days following MDC's receipt of architect's certification of 25% completion of Project Phase 2. New parking garage with at least 800 parking spaces. $7.5 million to be disbursed within 5 business days following MDC's receipt of certification of completion for Project Phase 2. This article is entitled, "MCSO Arrests 38 People After Prostitution John Sting," by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Midland County Sheriff's Office reported that 38 people were arrested for the solicitation of prostitution after a John Sting by several law enforcement agencies within the Permian Basin. From January 10th through January 13th, the MCSO, Texas DPS, Midland CID agents, DPS Intelligence and Counterterrorism, Homeland Security Investigations, the Odessa Police Department, and the Midland Police Department joined forces to carry out the joint operation. According to the MCSO's social media post, the goal of the John Sting was to identify and arrest people soliciting prostitutes and maximize the rescue of human trafficking victims. Jail records indicate that 5 were arrested on January 10th, 3 on January 11th, 16 on January 12th, 2 on January 13th, and 12 on January 14th. This article is entitled, "Midland County to Hold Public Hearing, Vote on Jail, February 20th," by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Midland County commissioners said there will be a hearing for the public to give input on the funding plan for the new jail project on Monday. In December, Midland County commissioners cited the necessity of a new jail and fund security when they decided to fund the $170 million project using a certificate of obligation, non-voter approved debt, as opposed to a general obligation bond, which would have been voted on by county residents. The issuance of the certificate of obligation is a pivotal step in securing necessary funds to support essential initiatives vital to the growth and well-being of our county jail, and, in return, community, Midland County stated in mid-December. The public hearing will be held on February 20th, the same day the court will act on whether it will move forward with the certificate of obligation. In early December, Midland County Judge Terry Johnson said law enforcement personnel and jail staff deserve a safer environment than what exists at the current jail. Precinct 4 Commissioner Diane Anderson said many of her constituents would like to see the jail come to fruition and urge the avoidance of a bond. Although they did not vote to put the issue to a public vote, Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez encouraged the public to voice their opinion on the matter. Precinct 4 Commissioner Scott Ramsey said he was conflicted on the proper funding avenue for the jail, but ultimately voted in favor of the certificate of obligation in December. This article is entitled, Police Seeking Help Locating Missing Person in Stanton by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Martin County Sheriff's Office is asking for public assistance in locating 35-year-old Ronald Jean Smith. Smith was last seen in Stanton, Texas, and is 5'9" and 180 pounds. He has brown eyes and black hair. Smith goes by the nickname Ron for short. He also has tattoo sleeves on both arms and a tattoo on his chest. If anyone knows Smith's whereabouts, please contact Jackie Smith at 432-349-4209. This article is entitled Midland Community Theater's Wizard of Oz. Event at Library Kicks Off Season Outreach Program by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. The Midland Community Theater debuted its new community outreach initiative this weekend with a Wizard of Oz event held at the Centennial Library. The classic tale of tornadoes, talking animals, the Emerald City, and flying monkeys kicks off the theater's 2024 season. Cast members read the story to families visiting the Loop 250 location, offered some wicked photo ops, and joined them in crafts afterwards. However, the local gathering stood as more than a way to get Midlanders interested in upcoming productions. "We want to meet people where they're at," marketing director Hannah Alley said. "People might not have the money or time to join the theater, or maybe they're feeling overwhelmed or intimidated by live theater. We want people to realize it really is for everyone, and we want to accommodate." Of course, a big cornerstone of MCT has always been education, so being able to tell a story at the library and have that crossover is amazing. Ali said the theater will host at least one pay-what-you-can showing of The Wizard of Oz for the community. The pay-what-you-can shows allow Tall City residents who don't normally visit the theater a chance to enjoy an afternoon of family-friendly entertainment. "We plan to do more events like this in the future because it's a great way to support education, the kids love it, and it's a great opportunity to meet the community," Ali added. The Wizard of Oz runs February 2nd to March 2nd, with the only matinee performance to be held at 2:30 p.m. February 18th. All other performances will be at 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Learn more at www.mctmidland.org. This column is called Opinion. It is entitled, "Taxpayers Shouldn't Foot the Bill for Hotel Development," by Dan Corrales, guest columnist. Dan Corrales is an at-large Midland City Councilman. "I am not against a downtown hotel. However, as a genuine fiscal conservative, I am not an advocate of the price tag taxpayers are expected to foot the bill for. This is the third taxpayer-funded hotel deal brought before council, though this one is different. The penultimate deal with Midway from Houston was for $30 million, half cash from MDC and the other half city incentives. Taxpayers are now being asked to contribute $45 million in cash from MDC and $28 million in incentives. MDC derives its revenue from sales tax, so when you buy a gallon of milk, you pay that tax. That is your taxpayer money, Midland. So why the inaccurate price tag of $45 million? The $28 million in incentives was never communicated to the public. That is where my $80 million estimate came from, which was not fake news. Here's what the public didn't know. $9.3 million in city hotel occupancy tax, 7% of revenue, 10-year rebate. $8 million in state hotel occupancy tax, 6% of revenue, 10-year rebate. $5 million in property tax, 10-year rebate. not an abatement. $4.7 million in state sales and use tax 10-year rebate. $280,000 development / permitting fee waiver. $200,000 construction material sales tax rebate. $250,000 removal of Energas improvements. $250,000 vacation of Colorado Street. $70,000 vacation of Alley. Total incentive value $28,115,423.50. Total cash $45 million. Total city state from city council $73,115,423.50. Not including other initiatives to be offered. $4.5 billion from Downtown Midland Management District. $1.7 million in county property tax, $1.3 million in county hotel occupancy tax, $1 million in Midland College property tax, $1 million in Midland Hospital property tax. Total tax entity incentives, $82,615,423. City Council will vote on this Tuesday. Historically, City Council approves it, then other tax entities follow. Reach out to your county, Midland College, hospital elected officials, and DMMD to voice your concern. Should this pass, they are next on the agenda, literally. The request for proposals, RFP, from the city and MDC was for development of the Western United Life Building block only. Of four submitted, two were from Midland, Midland Downtown Renaissance and Insignia Hospitality Group. IHG is owned and operated by a Midlander with successfully built hotels in Midland, Odessa, and Houston, among others. They plan to bring a Marriott-branded hotel, same brand as in Odessa, by the sports complex before the RFP was issued. They have the banking reference and funding plans and a hotel franchise to do it, and offered to build it downtown on this block with zero incentives from the taxpayer except the land. MDR was chosen because we scored a transformational project with a two-block proposal that would put a parking garage with ground floor retail on the Western United Life block with a sky bridge to the hotel on the parking lot of One Wall Plaza. One Wall is owned by Franklin Mountain Permian, which Paul Foster, an El Paso billionaire, has an ownership interest in. Franklin Mountain owns the Bank of America building, One Wall Plaza, the First Capital Bank building, and others. What was MDR's ask at the time? The last Santa Rita deal of $30 million. Paul Foster matters because the MDR group touted his experience in hotel development and operation in El Paso and success in placing a baseball stadium downtown. MDR does not have any experience as hoteliers. Council members met with MDR and an attorney from El Paso who worked with Paul Foster and viewed a video of all Paul Foster had done. Things went south months later when council was informed Paul Foster was no longer part of the deal. One Wall would have to be purchased by MDR from Franklin Mountain for approximately $10 million. No Paul Foster, no hotel brand, no Marriott, no Hilton. No points if you stay there. Points matter. MDR then says they may not be able to buy that building and want approval of an alternate proposal where they only develop one block. Where's the rub? MDR now wants $80 million. We also have legal issues. A governmental body ought not score a project on one proposal and then turn around and grant it for a different proposal. That is not fair to those whose proposal wasn't accepted. They have standing to sue the city. Where is the transparency? The $28 million was not in the MRT, on TV, the MDR website, or MDR's Media Day. Banks do not fund 60% of a hotel without having a pro forma, a hotel brand, or experience in hotels. But this gift is not a loan. The scrutiny merited by elected officials should be more risk-averse than a bank. Yet your council has not even met in executive session to discuss the finalized agreement, which was not ready before City Council and MDC board members received an invite for the emergency meeting Monday at 10 a.m. It is a disservice to taxpayers and a dereliction of duty to vote for this. Do your elected officials have the taxpayers' interests at heart or someone else's? No one with acute business acumen would approve this. That is why I will vote no. According to the Texas Public Policy Foundation, corporate welfare occurs when the government favors certain businesses. This practice of economic development creates a damaging misconception about corporate welfare, which leads to economic contraction, not expansion. True fiscal conservatives do not selectively adhere to their principles. The do as I say, not as I do approach is not genuine. We cannot call ourselves one thing one day and something else the next. That, my fellow Midlanders, is hypocrisy and has no place in local government, especially not the Midland I grew up in. This is the Life Tributes column. Jerry Dempsey, December 18, 1933 to January 17, 2024. Jerry Nell Reeves Dempsey, Nani, 90, passed away peacefully Wednesday, January 17th. Jerry Nell was born December 18, 1933 in Wellington, Texas to William and Pearl Bull Reeves. She married Edwin Dempsey on June 19, 1953, in Wellington, Texas. She was preceded in death by her parents, Bill and Pearl Reeves, her husband, Ed Dempsey, her daughter, Susan Dempsey Hendricks, and her siblings, Gay McAllister and husband, Bob, as well as her younger brother, Glenn Reeves. She is survived by her daughter, Shelley Berger Rash of Odessa, son-in-law, Jay Hendricks of Odessa, as well as six grandchildren. Jerry was also blessed with four great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations be made to the American Cancer Society, The Bridge, or any organization that is most special to you. Mark Anthony Chavez, March 5, 1979 to January 17, 2024. Mark Anthony Chavez, 45, of Midland, passed away on January 17th in Midland. He was born on March 5, 1979 in Midland. Mark is survived by his father, Juan Chavez, and his son, Damian Edward Chavez. He was preceded in death by his mother, Laura Chavez, and his brother, John Gabriel Chavez. The viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday, January 23rd at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Please join us in honoring and remembering Mark at the funeral service, which will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, January 24th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Fairview Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Anne Klein. Anne Klein, age 88, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, January 10th. Anne was born in Mount Pleasant, Texas. Public viewing and visitation will be held Wednesday, January 24th, from 2 to 6 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. The rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at St. Anne's Catholic Church. A mass of Christian burial will be celebrated on Thursday, January 25th at 2 p.m. at St. Anne's Church, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Laureano F. Maldonado, Jr. Laureano F. Maldonado, Jr., 74, passed away peacefully surrounded by his family on January 19th. A visitation will be held Wednesday, January 24th from 3 till 8 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, January 25th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Stanton. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, January 23rd. Council to further discuss ARPA spending. The Odessa City Council will spend more time Tuesday discussing how to spend American Rescue Plan Act money. Finance Director Kaylee Banda will go over the rules during the council's work session at 3 p.m. The city has until the end of the year to obligate $8.5 million in ARPA funds and until December 31, 2026 to spend it. Department heads were recently asked to come up with wish lists, and Mayor Javier Hoven asked each council member to prioritize projects for their districts. The Public Works Department provided a long list of street projects, while the Police Department asked for an updated 911 system. The Fire Department listed cancer screenings, hiring, and retention incentives and updated tools on its wish list. The department also noted it will need additional fire stations in the future and to replace a couple of existing fire stations. The police and fire departments also noted the crumbling two-story parking garage downtown needed to be demolished. Communications Director Monica McDaniel will also provide the council a sneak peek of the city's redesigned website during the work session. The consolidated and streamlined website will launch Thursday. During the regular council meeting at 6 p.m., the council will consider decodifying the Odessa Department Corporation's guidelines for its downtown infrastructure and facade grant program and designating P-Bar Bell's Bell Ranch an industrial district for 7 years. Among the items on the council's consent agenda is an amendment to the police department's budget. On January 25, 2022, the council agreed to purchase a packaged bundle of hardware, software, training programs, 24/7 customer support, and equipment refreshes from Axon, a company that provides taser, smart weapons, body cameras, and other high-tech gear to law enforcement agencies. The contract was for roughly $638,000 a year for 10 years. However, the purchase never made it into the budget in 2022, nor did it make it into the budget in 2023. The city's finance department lost a number of critical staff members in the months following the council's decision to fire city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks in December 2022. Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, who also spent much of her time dealing with the city's finances, quit 1 week after the council fired Marrero. Zachary Becerra, the city's budget manager, submitted his resignation letter in April, and Director of Finance Larry Fry retired at the end of May, and Interim Director of Finance Seth Bowles quit in October. Banda was hired November 13th. Bored Teachers Comedy Tour. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland, will present the Bored Teachers Comedy Tour on Sunday, January 28th. The doors will open at 6 p.m. and the event will start at 7 p.m. Tickets start at $35. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/33F8MH5A. City of Midland crews repairing water main breaks. Crews with the City of Midland are working on two water main breaks. One occurred at the 3200 block of Haines Avenue. The second took place around Wall Street and Pecos Avenue. Residential homes in each area and businesses near Wall and Pecos will experience a service disruption. The anticipated time of repair is approximately 4 to 6 hours. Crews are working as quickly as possible to restore water. Drivers are encouraged to proceed with caution and avoid the areas when possible. Updates will be provided as available. Honoring our heroes. Last month, leaders from Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School unveiled a completed memorial to the school's namesakes and thank local VFW Post 4372 for helping make it possible. Students began the effort for the flags and flagpoles to stand with the bronze bust of Staff Sergeant Marvin Rex Young of the United States Army and Private First Class Alfred Max Wilson of the United States Marine Corps and the Ector County ISD, newsletter said. VFW Post 4372 helped carry that effort to its fruition. The school is named after these two ECISD graduates who were posthumously awarded Medals of Honor for their service in combat. Permian Basin Science and Engineering Fair coming up. The annual 40th Permian Basin Science and Engineering Fair is coming up February 2nd and 3rd in the University of Texas Permian Basin Gym. This year, Diamondback Energy is the sponsor. That's a huge thing, said Doug Young, UTPB Senior Lecturer in the Department of Chemistry and Physics. Public viewing of projects is tentatively scheduled from noon to 1 p.m. February 3rd at the UTPB Gym. Awards are expected to be presented at 2 p.m. Students from grades 3 through 12 can enter, and they can come from throughout the Permian Basin, Young said. We have a good number of projects, particularly in the elementary division from ECISD. The STEM Academy is now part of ECISD, so they're actually going to be contributing a few projects. They're really spread out pretty evenly. The Young Women's Leadership Academy, for example, is another one from Midland that's sending some students to us, Young said. There are three divisions in the competition: elementary, which is for students from 3rd through 5th grade, the junior division, which is for students in grades 6 through 8, and the senior division, which is for students in grades 9 through 12, he added. The junior and senior division group, if they win first or second place, will be eligible to go to the state fair in College Station, Young said. That will be in March. They sponsor one project to participate in the International Science and Engineering Fair, which is in Los Angeles this year. Last year, one of the projects was a self-navigating submarine that would navigate around obstacles, and another was a solar heat updraft tower with wind augmentation. Even if the projects don't work out, Young said, the big thing is that students learn from it. They learn a lot by doing these kinds of things, even if they fail. They succeed in learning something, he added. Young said he is pleased to have Ector County ISD and Midland ISD schools take part in the fair. I think we're seeing a wider range, particularly in the elementary division, of schools from ECISD. Reagan Elementary, for example, is participating, and they have a very strong group. They're giving Carver Center, a school for identified gifted and talented students, a run for their money in terms of participation, especially in the elementary divisions. The elementary division has become a lot more competitive than it used to be, which I guess is also a good thing, he added. Young said the fair is seeing some growth, but not a lot yet in terms of participation. We're still recovering from COVID, but we're on a good glide path, I think, for recovering from COVID, he added. Last year it was small, but it was competitive. This year I'm hoping to see more projects than we did last year. That's always the goal, Young said. The fair had about 300 projects last year. The deadline to enter this year is January 25th if they send an email to sciencefair@utpb.edu. We can give them more information. And if they're interested in volunteering or judging, they should also give us a call or send us an email as well, and we'll get them set up for that, Young said. He added that he would encourage more students to try the science fair out. There is no better way to prepare for a career in science engineering than to do science fair, and I can say that as a scientist. When I was in graduate school and had to do poster presentations, it was just like doing science fair. There's no difference, and I actually won a lot of awards when I was a graduate student for the posters that I did. Again, it is related back to when I was a student doing science fair. So again, in my view, there is no better way to prepare for a career than to do science fair. I know robotics is really big here, but with robotics, they give you a problem to solve and it works or it doesn't work, Young said. In science fair, you create your own problems that you solve or you don't solve, he added. Although it's a lot of work to organize, he added that it's a very gratifying experience. Yvonne Drinkard is his co-director. Working with the children, seeing how clever they are, is always rewarding and knowing that you're planting seeds. I did science fair when I was a kid, and it was a big thing when I was growing up. It was a big thing to me. Everybody that is involved in science fair when they're young tend to feel the need to try to move it forward as much as we can, Young said. The work of organizing the science fair goes on year-round. It really starts getting hot and heavy in about August, when the students generally begin working on their projects in August or September. Then in December, January, is when we're doing our thing, ordering medals and pins that are going to be given away to students this year. We did it before COVID, and this is the first year we're able to start doing it again. Thanks to Diamondback Energy, once again, they gave us the money so that we could do something like this, Young said. Neighborhood Watch Meeting to Focus on Child Trafficking Awareness. The Odessa Police Department's monthly Neighborhood Watch Meeting is scheduled for 7 p.m. Tuesday in the OPD Classroom, 205 North Grant Avenue. This meeting will focus on child trafficking awareness, and Harmony Home will be addressing this serious topic. Special Projects Funded at State Parks Across Texas. Thanks to park lovers from all over the Lone Star State, Texas State Parks will soon have new offerings for park visitors. In honor of the 2023 centennial of Texas State Parks, Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, TPWF, raised almost $2 million in private funds to enhance the visitor experience at every state park across Texas. The funded projects are as diverse as the parks and the people who visit them. Projects include a Braille Trail for visually impaired visitors at Caddo Lake State Park in East Texas, a portable planetarium at Resaca de la Palma in South Texas, kayaks, paddles, and life jackets for a new paddling program at South Llano River State Park in Central Texas, shade trees for Balmoray State Park's iconic pool in West Texas, and bike repair stations at Paladuro Canyon State Park in the Panhandle. Thanks to generous donors, these projects will delight visitors of all ages. Major support for the Centennial fundraising campaign came from our Centennial Champions, a group of Texas philanthropic leaders who understand that enduring significance of our state parks. The Centennial Champions include the Fondren Foundation, the John M. O'Quinn Foundation, the Elkins Foundation, the J.W. Couch Foundation, and the James A. Buddy Davidson Charitable Foundation. Thanks to their generous support, all donations were matched dollar for dollar, doubling the impact of each and every gift. Hundreds of Texans responded to the call to support Texas State Parks, including Randy and Don Bazell of Corpus Christi. The two are familiar faces at Mustang Island State Park near their Corpus Christi home. where they are steadfast volunteers. In 2019, the two became master naturalists and became even more engaged with parks near Corpus Christi. We were delighted to learn about Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, a well-run nonprofit that supports Texas state parks that allows for direct investment in the parks we choose to support, Randy Bissell said in a news release. And then we heard about the centennial celebration of our parks in 2023, and we wanted to help locally. The Bissells made a generous donation to TPWF's 2023 State Park fundraising campaign. The campaign raised almost $2 million for needed park projects across the state, and the Bissells earmarked their donation to benefit the parks close to their heart, Mustang Island, Goose Island, and Lake Corpus Christi. Funds will flow to 88 state parks across Texas to implement the projects, which should be completed this year. There were so many wonderful moments to cherish from the centennial celebration of our parks and the many contributors exemplifying the very best of our park supporters, said Texas State Park Director Rodney Franklin. As we head into our next century, we are grateful to everyone who donated and the centennial champions who appreciate that our parks provide for all Texans. The generous support of park lovers who funded these impactful projects will be felt by families for years and decades to come. Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation partner with TPWD and HEB to celebrate 100 years of Texas state parks through 2023. HEB was presenting sponsor of the celebration and helped Texas State Park engage all Texans in discovering and enjoying their state parks. Since 1991, Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation has raised and invested more than $235 million to advance Texas's proud outdoor traditions and conserve our state's wildlife, habitat, and natural resources. Our vision for all Texans to have access to the wild things and wild places of our state, both now and for generations to come. For more information, please visit www.tpwf.org. Register to vote. The last day to register to vote in the March primary is Monday, February 5th. The first day of early voting is Tuesday, February 20th. And the last day to apply to vote by mail is February 23rd. The final day of early voting is March 1st, and Election Day is March 6th in Texas. Questions? Visit tinyurl.com/24xacbvs. PD investigating jewelry theft. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a theft that occurred at the jewelry corner located inside Music City Mall. According to an OPD news release, investigation revealed that both males shown in the surveillance footage stole approximately $5,000 worth of merchandise. They fled the scene in a white Dodge Charger Scat Pack, which displayed a stolen license plate during the time of the theft. Anyone who recognizes either suspect is encouraged to contact Detective A. Reyes at 432-335-5706 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-00143-34. Beef, chicken, or seafood. Chefs draw lots for inaugural culinary competition. Next month, 11 chefs from around the Permian Basin will get a chance to showcase their skills to hungry attendees at the inaugural Chef Showdown. The event, which is a fundraiser for the Nonprofit Management Center, will take place at 6 p.m. February 29th at the Ector County Coliseum in Barn B. The fundraiser is a thrilling live cook-off, accompanied by live music as well as an auction. Guests will have the unique opportunity to vote for their favorite dish and witness the crowning moment when the grand prize, a golden skillet, is awarded to the outstanding chef of the evening. A kickoff promotional event, which featured all 11 chefs, was held Monday in the NMC Odessa location at 1000 Maple Avenue. The event also featured the chefs participate in a drawing for which protein they will use as the main ingredient in their culinary creations for the showdown. Today's event was the protein drawing. Nonprofit Management Center Vice President and Committee Co-Chair of the event, Evan Thomas, said, "We have people who will be cooking beef, chicken, or seafood, and a designated vegetarian chef so that people can have a diversity of different food. All the chefs come from around the area. Participating chefs include Tracy Wood of Driftwood Catering, Giancarlo Del Aguia, Flair Taverna, Teak Allen Berry, Jersey Girl Pizza, Luis Arenas, Market Street, Yvette Hernandez, Mico Sinita, Food Trailer and Catering, John Vandergrift, Midland Meat Company Half Acre, Ruben Carrasco, Pachucos, Raul Vasquez, Ratingo, Didi and Eric Prado, Rooster's Diner, Devin Subia, Tasty Bones, Roland Chicken, and Mike Carrillo, Renew Health Coaching. We have some of the best chefs in our community," Thomas said. "What people are going to experience when they come to our event is a tasty small dish meals of so many different varieties. It's going to be a real treat to attend." For some of the participants, this is not their first competition. Vasquez, who is from Andrews, was featured on the Food Network's Supermarket Stakeout back in 2022. "I am pretty excited," Vasquez said. "The last competition I competed in was on the Food Network. This will be a fun local competition, and I'll be representing Andrews. I am eager to showcase my skills and everything I've learned over the years." He took second on Supermarket Stakeout, but he knows he's in for a tough competition next month. "We have super talented chefs all the way around," Vasquez said. For Hernandez, this will be her first time competing in a food competition. She was relieved to draw pork during Monday's protein event and not seafood. "I'm excited either way. I just don't want seafood," Hernandez said while laughing. Hernandez, who has been in the cooking business for 10 years, said she wanted to compete in this event because she was ready for a challenge. "I wanted to step out of my comfort zone and go and compete," Hernandez said. For more information about the event or the Nonprofit Management Center, go to nmc-pb.org/chef-showdown. TxDOT issues traffic alert for Cotton Flat Bridge site. The Texas Department of Transportation issued a traffic alert Monday for the main lanes of I-20 in Midland County. The westbound left main lane of I-20 will be closed at the Cotton Flat Bridge site from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. Tuesday. The construction team will complete the beam lift for this overpass. Watch for slow-moving traffic in this work zone. Expect delays or use an alternate route if possible.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, January 20th. Kent Companies completes acquisition of DC Oil Company. The Kent Companies announced its acquisition of DC Oil Company January 17th. The acquisition of Birmingham, Alabama-based DC Oil Company includes 13 Chevron Texaco-branded convenience stores, a fuel transportation fleet, and a portfolio of dealer accounts, effectively growing the footprint of the Kent Companies, a Texas-based family-owned and operated business. Quote, "The strategic move bolsters the Kent Companies' position in the Southeast region and marks its 8th operating state, a press release reads. Quote, this transaction not only enhances the Kent Company's footprint across Texas and the Southeast, but also reaffirms its commitment to growing the KentQuick brand while providing quality service and products to our loyal guests, the release continues. The Kent Companies announced it would retain the Chevron Texaco branding for fuel while embarking on a rebranding of the stores to KentQuick. The company said it also plans to expand with additional stores in Alabama and other Southeast states it operates in. Quote, we are thrilled to welcome DC Oil Company into the Kent family, Bill Kent, the owner of the Kent Company, said in the release. Continuing the quote, our plan to maintain Chevron Texaco fuel ensures a seamless transition for our guests, while the rebranding to KentQuick represents our commitment to delivering exceptional quality and convenience. David Collins has a great team and is a longtime friend. I'm honored David would choose us to continue his legacy. Besides the quality of David's stores, team members, and operation, we are really excited to expand our relationship with Chevron in Alabama and throughout the Southeast. End quote. With the transaction, the Kent Company's total store count now stands at 104 locations. The company also supplies fuel to an additional 150-plus dealer sites across 6 states. Quote, I could not be more pleased with the sale to the Kent Companies, said David Collins, the owner of DC Oil Company. Quote, Bill Kent and his team have been extremely professional throughout the entire process. My biggest concern when choosing a buyer was my employees. I am confident now that I made the right decision. I got started in the petroleum business in 1990 as a cashier in a Texaco convenience store. I worked for Texaco for 6 years and then another 6 years for a Texaco jobber. I started on my own with one store and then built 2 more over a 5-year period. In 2008, I was able to purchase a small jobbership as we grew our company. In my opinion, we were able to put together one of the best management teams in the industry. Any award, success, or growth was a direct result of the hard work of my employees. Today, after 34 years, I have sold a company that I am very proud of. Best of luck to Bill Kent and his company. About the Kent Companies. Founded in West Texas by the late Buck Kent in 1957, the Kent Companies began as Kent Oil and Kent Distributors and still remains a family-owned business today. The Kent Companies are comprised of multiple entities, including KentQuick convenience stores, Mr. Payroll Check Cashing, Rustic Cafe, Huddle House, Baskin Robbins, Kent Car Washes, Kent Lubrication Centers, Westex Urgent Cares, Prince Signs, Kent Tire Company, and Kent Fuels. All of the Kent Companies' entities are continually voted the best in their respective fields by the local communities. The Kent Companies were recently voted by the Midland Reporter-Telegram as Permian Basin's best employer with more than 100 employees. The company is proud to offer team member industry-leading benefits, including free health insurance for team members, paid 100% by the company, free life insurance, weekly pay, vision and dental insurance, vacation and sick pay, tuition reimbursement, and more.
This is the Dear Abby column. Baby's arrival exposes deep fissures in family. Dear Abby, my stepdaughter Zoe has recently had her first baby, and we are very excited. She lives far away. My husband Carl is taking the trip but I have to stay behind because my elderly mother is living with us. I asked family to stay with Mom, but they're involved in their busy lives, and Mom clings to me. While I called to congratulate other relatives on becoming new aunts, etc., none of them reciprocated. Later, one of them reluctantly said they were told I was not the grandmother. Even if Zoe's biological mother had passed away, nor would I ever be. This is bittersweet. I do not want to replace anyone. I've been hoping for a grandchild for a long time. I have been with Carl for more than 20 years. I'm crushed. No pictures are being sent to me, though when I was planning Zoe's wedding from soup to nuts, we were in constant contact, and I thought we were growing closer. I guess not. How do I navigate this? My mother-in-law is barely speaking to me since I can't join in the trip to see the baby and has become very snotty. Must I just admire from afar like a bystander, pretending to care? Signed, Cast Aside in New York. Dear Cast Aside, I wish you had mentioned which family member was telling the others that you're not to be considered that baby's grandmother. Could it have been Zoe's mother? If that's the case, there appears to be more than a little jealousy on her part and a blatant attempt to isolate you. You are the child's step-grandmother, and photos should be shared with you. I hope Carl will impress this upon his daughter as well as let her know how hurt you have been by the treatment you have been receiving. What happened was unjustified. The more love in this world, the better. And labels should be used to include rather than isolate. Dear Abby, my friend often complains that she and her husband don't have any other friends, and she doesn't know why. I know why, but I'm not sure if I should say anything. Her husband is nice, but he's a long-winded talker who takes over every conversation, bragging about himself and the people he knows. I believe he does this to impress people, but it actually repels them. He does this every time, and I have witnessed guys walk away and keep their distance from him. This includes my husband. She wants my husband to get closer to him, but my husband can't stand him because of this. So, should I be honest and tell her what the deal is? I don't want to hurt her feelings. Or must I keep pretending I don't know? Signed, Knows Why in New Jersey. Dear Knows, I think you would be doing the woman a favor by telling her something like this. I can't arm twist my husband into a closer relationship with yours than they already have. If you would like to know why, I will tell you. If she says yes, explain that you like her very much, but her husband's need to dominate the conversation and brag about his accomplishments, net worth, etc., fill in the blanks, drives people away. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.